Hello, listeners. You're welcome here. This is Nigeria's History in Our Time, a weekly podcast series that presents Nigeria's history through a global lens. You can listen on Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, and Anchor. My name is Ojo Aderemi, and I'm your host. On this episode, which is the premiere episode, I'll present a summary of Nigeria's history and introduce the likely structure that I may be adopting to share knowledge. Some of my sessions will involve interviews that I will do with university professors and other academic historians. This podcast might not follow the chronological sequence in Nigeria's history. Sometimes I will simply explore a topic in history out of a wide variety of events, but be rest assured that I will touch every topic in history. I'll also do episodes or sessions on the life and times of major historical icons which will interest you. Let me quickly assure you that you will never be bored. Nobody gets bored with great stories, especially when you're sure those stories really happened and when there are facts and data to provide support. Nothing trumps facts. So Nigeria is situated within a global context because of its historical antecedents and influence from global affairs. On local institutions, that is, some global events influenced the past of Nigeria and, of course, the present and the future. For example, the Cold War also affected Nigeria greatly. You had the Anglo-Nigerian Defense Pact and, of course, the suspicion that the CIA was part of the assassination of Murtala Muhammad, one of Nigeria's military heads of state. So, however, Nigeria is a product of events beyond colonialism, like many other nations of the world. So you may need to be ready to engage me regarding some of the myths of the colonial influence in Nigeria. We're not saying that Nigeria was not influenced by colonialism, because that's a historical fact, but that is not the only thing that defines Nigeria as a nation. There are several other things that define us as a nation beyond colonialism, and Nigeria as an entity, in fact, predicts colonialism. Maybe not as a nation, of course. No nation sprung out of just anywhere. Most nations were just a patchwork of principalities and domains all around. You talk about Germany, Italy, and several other countries that had to come together through whatever means, wars and diplomacy. So, rewind. What is history? It is the title of a book by E.H. Carr. Okay, that's on a lighter note. But it is a book that was written by E.H. Carr, which is very interesting. It's a collection of his speeches at a university conference in the UK. That was in the 1980s, I guess. Yes, that it's a very good read. If you can get your hand on it, you can always get a soft copy online. Just search online, you get a copy. It's a very good book to read so that you'll understand the nuances in differentiating between stories and histories. So then it is also the aggregate of past events that is defining history. or past events which invariably have shaped the present and may likely shape the future. So that's, I'm just trying to define what history is so that we'll follow each other and understand what we're doing here exactly. And now back to our discussion. We cannot understand Nigeria's history without first understanding its geography or its environmental features, because many of these things played a role. You know, there was a French historian who wrote the history of France. I think his name is Jeanne. He told us that no nation exists in the air. So everything you call a nation, everything you call history, must happen within a geographical space. So that's one of the requirements for historical events. Obviously, it is obvious, right? So Nigeria's history occurred within a large expanse of land. History is a continuum, but it's still a summary of past events. What we're doing today will go down as history later. So a large expanse of land was, 1.386 million square miles. 1,386,210 square kilometers. That was Nigeria's land mass at a point. Wait a minute. In 2018, Nigeria was 910,770 square kilometers. The meaning is that Nigeria was larger, which now borders Nigeria on the east. Yes, the whole of the Cameroons was part of Nigeria. I'll do a full session on that later, so we'll understand how all of that came about. You can also read further yourself, but I'll do a session that goes, it's an interesting part of our history. So Nigeria is bordered on the north by Niger Republic and the Lake Chad on the northeast, and also Chad Republic at in a part of the border, and Cameroon on the east, like I've said, inter alia, the Republic of Benin on the west and the northwest, the Atlantic Ocean on the south. All of these features played significant role in history, the history of Nigeria, and they are still relevant presently. You want to talk about the regional regional unrest in the northeast. You want to talk about the ports of Lagos and Port Harcourt. You want to talk about the border clash with Cameroon still. Just recently, as recent as the late 2000s, the ceding of Bakassi Peninsula to Cameroon, and that didn't just come that way. I'll do another session regarding that, because it's a protracted conflict between Nigeria and Cameroon. So the Atlantic Ocean especially was the medium of transport for the Portuguese, the Dutch, the English, and colonial agencies. You know, it was the medium through which the transatlantic slave trade was conducted, was done. Some have said it's not a trade, it's enslavement. But whichever school of thought you belong to, the Atlantic Ocean was an important piece in that arrangement. So Nigeria is watered by several large water bodies, rivers and streams and lakes too. You know, we have the River Niger, very popular, one of the longest flowing rivers in the world, which flows from Puntajalon Mountains and carried on its back different cultural influences and modes of civilization. Also, the River Benue also carries the same influence from the Cameroon mountains. One of such influence is the Kisra legend. You may need to read about that yourself. The Kisra legend, which points many tribes of the of the West African region to an Eastern origin. Almost all tribes of Western Africa have a mythical origin in the Eastern hemisphere of the world. It is the Middle East. The mythical father, the mythical father of the Hausa speaking tribes, or the Hausa people, that's Abu Yazid or Abu Yajidu or Bayajida. For those who have come across any of the variants of the name, it's actually Abu Yazid, but the local reconfiguration of that name will give you Abu Yajidu or Bayajida. I was from Baghdad in Iraq. So that's another variant of the Kisra legend. Oduduwa was from Mecca or Egypt for the Yoruba who speak the Anago language. There are Igbo traditions that point Igbo origin to the Palestine. So there are other water bodies, the Lake Chad, River Adigea, many others. And also, you may need to understand well the geographical climate of Nigeria. You need to understand how the regions are distributed, how they vary from each other, because this has played a very, very significant role in the history of the country, history of the tribes as well. The swamp dwellers, they had peculiarities which influenced their way of life. When you say swamp, you already understand what I'm talking about. They are confined to the coastal region for the mere fact that they lived in swamps. So their lives were generally amphibious. They transported themselves using canoes. They built aquatic houses. They worshipped marine gods. They planted leguminous crops and crops that could withstand water. So the place was generally waterlogged, so they couldn't form large kingdoms based because of their environment. They simply formed pockets of communities and kingdoms. They also made warfare. A few kingdoms sprung up, but not as you will find in the forest belt, which had so much trees that you could walk for days without getting a clear view of the sun. Yeah, it was that a cluster. The trees were that clustered together that you may not get a full view of the sun, and it was always a cool area. They cultivated yam and other tuberous crops, several crops. They formed fairly large kingdoms and empires, but they were not so accustomed to the use of horses in warfare, because the environment didn't allow it. You can't start riding horses when you have so much bush around you. I mean, horses are not animals built for that kind of an environment. So there was not enough space for cavalry warfare. Then we have the Hausa speaking northern neighbors who were skilled in cavalry warfare. Because the region was mostly treeless and arid, they formed great empires, the vestiges of which are still there to be seen. Now, the features played role in the historical interactions that will be touched in later episodes. You know, I'll just describe them in future episodes. So one very important point to note is that the people interacted long before the advent of European colonialism. So it wasn't Europe that brought Africa together or that brought Nigerian tribes together. No, they interacted so much that there are words that have become ingrained in the linguistic configuration of various ethnic groups. We barely notice them, in fact. You know, the word Yoruba itself is not of Anago origin. It's not from the Anago language of the Yoruba. These facts will be explored later in detail, so I'm just providing an introduction into what the podcast series will look like. And do not forget, it's Nigeria's history in our time. So it's going to be in form of a discussion, as well as the sharing of knowledge. We'll have interviews and other things. So the Europeans appeared in the 15th century. Yes, Prince Henry the Navigator ordered a bold adventurous crossing of the Atlantic Ocean to find a sea route to India after it's been dominated by Venice and Genoa, and later the Muslims, who after the death of Prophet Muhammad had conquered in all directions, and that included the whole of North Africa and certain parts of Southeastern Europe. So Europeans couldn't use the Mediterranean route to India further their trade, so they had to find a way around the Cape of Jador down to Akibad, then wanted to go around Africa. So that was what they did. So the entry of Portugal to West Africa in the 1460s eroded a massive interaction with Europeans. So you get what we're trying to discuss here, what you are saying here. So it wasn't exactly a West African mission that was established to colonize or something. The Europeans were looking for another route to India where they could trade their goods, their spice. So, but they ended up discovering for themselves West Africa already was interacting with the rest of the world. We had great empires that have been spoken about by different scholars and historians of both Arab and European origins. Sahadi, Leo Africanus, Ibn Khaldun, several of them who have spoken about these kingdoms. And so it wasn't to discover West Africa, it was to discover a trade route to India. So this interaction led to the buying of human beings to be used as beast of burden, that is slavery. And it's metamorphosed into what infamously is now known as the transatlantic slave trade, a very dark period in West African history and the history of Africa generally. Very, very dark period. It has affected our world history as well, and the effect of it is still being felt in the world today. So yeah, that's it. We'll do a special episode on that later. So in the north there were the Hausa states. You know, it's not just for 400 years the slavery existed, but that's not what's happened. That's not the only part that happened. That's not the only thing that happened in our history in Nigeria or West Africa generally. So in the north there were Hausa states. You know, kingdoms were forming, they were rising and they were falling just in accordance with human nature. You know, kingdoms rise, we interact with each other, form communities. From there we grow to cultural groups and then to kingdoms, and then we start to aspire to an expanded influence. We want to expand our influence, and that gives rise to empires which were forged on the back of warfare. So in the north there were the Hausa states, that is during the period we're talking about 1400s and before then, the time when we had a direct contact with the Europeans, a direct contact, I mean clashes with the Europeans. So while the slave trade was going on, while the Iberians were doing their thing while Europe was doing its thing. West Africa was also doing its thing. Nigeria was doing its thing as well. The Hausa states formed themselves. They formed the Kanem-Bornu Empire was expanding as well. The Hausa states could not form an empire, just to note, for various reasons, which I'll explore in another episode. One particular figure that I'll also talk about or dedicate to one entire episode to her, that's the Queen Amina Sukira. She was the queen of Zazzau in present-day Kaduna State, who neared the state of an empress. She almost became an empress, but she could not succeed because various reasons. There were various reasons, so you'll hear that later. So in the forest regions, there were the Oyo Empire, which later collapsed, and on its harsh heap rose Ibadan, the city that defended the realm. Ibadan has a very, very interesting history too, a history of intelligence, tactics, and prestige. In later episode, I'll talk about one of the most decisive battles in Nigeria's history, the Battle of Oshogbo, in which Ibadan troops clashed with Fulani cavalrymen. So that's for the Yoruba tribe. Benin Kingdom also expanded into an empire, a very large empire. In fact, it's incorporated so much of Yoruba territories too. Yes. And also Nupe. The Igbos built an acephalous system. So they were not the empire people, but they had their own system of government, a form of primitive democracy, or democracy in a form that is not as advanced as we have now, but that's the best way to describe it. So I will explore the Arochukwu society and British incursion into it. In the end, like Chinua Achebe said in Things Fall Apart, the British came and leveled everybody, you know. Colonialism began in Lagos in 1851, and Sokoto was conquered in 1904. Two protectorates, North and South, were merged to form Nigeria in 1914. There was a colony of Lagos, which was not a protectorate, it was a colony. You know, constitutions were written to govern the country, and indirect rule was imported from India to be used in Nigeria. The Indian experience, quickly, did teach the British a lesson, which was never to give sufficient education to colonized people. You know, if you're conversant with the history of India and the struggle for independence in India, you would see that education played a very large part. You know, it was so bad that the first indigenous university was established just 12 years to independence. So the college affiliated to University of London was established in 1948, the same year the University of Legon in Ghana became operational. So there were two universities that were established in the same year. Now there's a debate between the University of Baden, that is the University College Baden then, and the University of Ghana, that is the University of Legon, Ghana. You know, there's this supremacy battle, which one came first, which one became operational first. Those were not the first universities in West Africa. Freya Bay College was established in 1827, and that's the first university in Africa, a degree awarding university. So independence became a course shortly after, you know. Nigeria gained independence, but that became a course shortly after because political turmoil plagued Nigeria's post-independence era a lot, and some of those things we have not recovered from them. We've not completely recovered from them. In fact, that's, you know, in the process of transition, of Nigeria, we've been unable to shed some of the bitter experiences of the past because they still play a role in our future. It's, I mean, the military came in and, okay, two bloody military coups following in succession to each other culminated in widespread killings and a bloody civil war. So Nigeria has also wasted a lot of lives, millions. And those people, I believe, you know, that era is just dark. It's just, it's mind-numbing. If you bother to read well and understand the peculiarity of Nigeria on the world stage, the expectation that people had of a country which could have been the first black superpower in the world. We had the potential, we still have the potential, but we do not have the leadership with which that can be realized. You know, you will discover all of these things if you ingrain yourself, if you explore very well Nigeria's history. I mean, the kind of leaders we had at independence are far more superior than the leaders we have presently. At least we'll agree on that, I believe. So since 1966, our military administrations began springing up such that much of the independence history of Nigeria was plagued by military rule, which introduced unbridled corruption to public space between 1960 and 2000, and I think it's not 18, yes, which was estimated at $400 billion took flight from the nation's treasury. So you get all of this mind-numbing events that took place. So Nigeria's pro-democracy activists lost their lives, you know, after years of battling with military rule. Nigerians have finally had enough. Soldiers were becoming more undisciplined, and there was widespread dissolution with the military, and people saw that, okay, the military is incapable of saving Nigeria. And I believe many people still hold that view, except a few people. You know, Nigeria is a nation where we forget history quite quickly. We pay prices for that. Anyway, so Nigerians got tired at a point, and it was now a desperate affair. And activists, students, workers, ordinary people, traders engaged the military in a struggle to rid the country of dictatorship, and in the process there were human costs. Former soldiers were assassinated, and former generals also were arrested and put in prison. Labor leaders were arrested and put in prison, like Franco Kore and some other labor activists like that. Former leaders like General Musa Yar'Adua, Olusegun Obasanjo, Oladipo Odia were imprisoned, Admiral Ndubuisi, and several people were incarcerated. You know, it was a turbulent era, but the people won. You know, not without prizes and a mind-numbing event. People were beaten to death. There were people who were slaughtered, there were people who were bombed, there were women who were, you know, different things were done, a lot of things that, you know, some of them will never be proud of. A woman was shot through the vagina in Ibadan. You know, Ibadan is a city of very stubborn activists. So I'll do a special episode on human rights violation under General Sani Abacha, especially. Yes, that period especially. So very soon, and I'll do other episodes on human rights violation in Nigeria, So, and of course, this is because of the events of that era in our time, the relevance of that era in our time. So, listeners, I want you to follow this series, share the content with. I'm sure it will get every Nigerian thinking. It will inspire people to read more. It will also encourage further public discussion on Nigeria. So please support the project. Send ideas too. And my email is ojderemi@gmail.com. ojderemi@gmail.com. I thank you. Anticipate the next episode. Bye bye for now.